This reading is from Exploring the Labyrinth, A Guide for Healing and Spiritual Growth by Melissa Gail West. This reading asks you to imagine yourself as several different people in several different cultural contexts. If any of these imaginative roles doesn't feel right to you, feel free to remove yourself from that scene and simply listen. Imagine Sardinia, 3,500 years ago. You are a mourner in a funeral procession, winding deep into the stone cavern of a burial chamber. Torches flicker in the tomb, throwing into high relief a petroglyph of a labyrinth. As the burial ceremony begins, you study the labyrinth for comfort in your grief, knowing it offers a map for death and rebirth for your deceased friend. The labyrinth shows you the circuitous route that your friend will follow into the tomb of Mother Earth. Your eyes rest for a moment at the center, knowing that this center will transform from tomb to womb, birthing your friend into her new life in the spirit realms, back via the same winding route. Imagine Arizona, 1,000 years ago. You're an Anasazi Indian, living high in the cliff dwelling of Casa Grande. It is a cold afternoon in January, too cold to venture from the mesa, and you idly scratch a labyrinth into the adobe walls of your pueblo. As you carve the labyrinth from the soft pink earth, you remember how this labyrinth represents your people's emergence into this world from the previous world in which they dwelt. Your spirit swells with pride as your fingers trace your people's birth from the center of this labyrinth. Imagine France, 800 years ago. You are in Chartres Cathedral near Paris. In this great vaulting cathedral, you pause at the entrance to the stone labyrinth, recently inlaid so carefully into the floor of the nave. Looking up at the jewel-colored lights streaming through the rose window high in front of you, you ask God to bless your journey into the center of the labyrinth. You have prepared for this journey for months with prayer. This walk represents the dream of a lifetime. Instead of making the pilgrimage to Jerusalem too far and too dangerous, you walk this labyrinth now. You are on holy ground. And our second reading is from Labyrinth, Your Path to Self-Discovery by Tony Christie. The more I learn about the labyrinth, the more difficult it is for me to describe it. In attempting to describe the labyrinth, I am drawn to the first few lines of the Tao Te Ching that say, the way that can be spoken of is not the constant way. In other words, the Tao that can be described is not the Tao. The labyrinth is very much like this. A labyrinth that can be described is not a labyrinth. Any attempt to define the labyrinth is lacking in something because the labyrinth is knowledge, experience, reflection, wisdom, enlightenment, and more, all rolled into one. When you create a labyrinth with deep meaning and intention, you tune in to the parts and wholeness of the labyrinth on a deeper level. Creating a labyrinth that is vibrant, alive, and unique to you. You create a labyrinth temple of you. The opening of our first reading this morning described a labyrinth from Sardinia, a petroglyph carved into the stone wall of an underground burial chamber. This is the earliest labyrinth we have, thought to be around 3,500 years old. This labyrinth is of the type known as the classic seven-circuit labyrinth, sometimes referred to as the Cretan labyrinth. which you see there, and tucked into your bulletin and on the cover of your bulletin. From as early as the second millennium BC, we see petroglyphs and other drawings of labyrinths in India, Greece, Syria, Italy, and many labyrinths can be found from across the former Roman Empire. Melissa Gale West writes, "Labyrinths appeared throughout the world in the 1,000 years from AD 500 to AD 1500. Great stone labyrinths were built along the Scandinavian coastline from Iceland to Russia. Labyrinths were drawn and carved into cliff dwellings and mesas in the American Southwest. Turf labyrinths, made by cutting trenches into turf for the paths, with turf ridges delineating the path, were cut into the earth in Germany, Poland, and England. Stone and tile labyrinths were set into church floors in North Africa, Italy, and France. The famous Chartres labyrinth was constructed in 13th century France. This labyrinth is of a different type, exhibiting 11 paths snaking through 4 quadrants and a rosette in the center. So what's the big deal with labyrinths? We at Channing have held a labyrinth walk service in the summer for a number of years. I don't know how many times, but I know I've been to a number of Jody Davidson's labyrinth walks in the past. I understand from Diana that it preceded that as far back as Vicky, at least, Channing has been doing labyrinth walks. I thought maybe this summer it was time to have a service about walking labyrinths as a spiritual practice. The first time I walked a labyrinth was in the early 1990s. I've walked quite a few labyrinths since then. I've read about labyrinths, and I've listened to people more knowledgeable than I talk about labyrinths, and I've drawn labyrinths. And I've made labyrinths, made a big cloth labyrinth about the size of this room. So doing a service on this topic didn't seem like it would be very hard. I'd like to circle back and snip out a couple of bits from our second reading of this morning. Tony Christie wrote, "The more I learn about the labyrinth, the more difficult it is for me to describe it." And the labyrinth that can be described is not a labyrinth. Any attempt to define the labyrinth is lacking in something. In preparing this service, this is precisely the brick wall I ran into. So the universe is laughing at me today. I'm going to scratch the surface a bit here this morning, knowing that I can only begin to convey what gives the labyrinth such depth of meaning. So let's start really basic. Melissa Gale West writes, "Throughout time, labyrinths have represented sacred journey. Part of the power of this sacred journey stems from the power of the labyrinth as sacred space." Sacred space, pretty basic. But what is sacred space? As soon as I start to look at definitions, I realize they all narrow the subject too much, creating a bias in the direction of a particular kind of spirituality. The definitions are too humanistic, or too esoteric. They're all too something. This can take away from how the space itself tells you without words as you enter it that it is sacred space. So I'm going to shy away from giving you anyone's definitions of sacred space, although we'll look at labyrinths through lenses of some common elements of sacred space. I'm going to quote again from Melissa Gale West. Seem to be leaning on her a lot. And she puts this so well. "The common elements of sacred space form the physical and energetic foundation for the labyrinth. You can walk the labyrinth without knowing anything about sacred space and still be transformed by the experience. It happened for me for many years that way. What I found, though, is that the experience of walking the labyrinth is immeasurably deepened by understanding the elements of sacred space. By being aware of how these elements are part of the labyrinth's power, you can work with them consciously as you walk." And that is probably a lifetime of study, but there it is. Jeff Soward, a well-known student of labyrinths, writes, "The temporary suspension of time and direction and isolation from two of the most important principles by which the world and our life upon it are ruled has always been attainable within the concealing walls of the labyrinth. I find this interesting, as in some respects, one could say labyrinths are all about time and direction. But what he says here is very true in my experience, and this kind of suspension is a hallmark of sacred time and sacred space. Let's look at the classic Seventh Circuit labyrinth. Actually, look at it. What do you notice about its shape? Anybody? Excuse me?
It's an archway.
It's an archway? And you can look at that one and the one in your bulletin. They're slightly different shapes, but same principles.
Symmetrical?
Symmetrical, more or less. The one in the bulletin is more circular. Yeah. So there's a circularity to both, but more in some versions of it than others, renditions of it.
It's a tree of life.
Ah, tree of life. That's a good observation. And do you want to say anything, Joanne, about how it's a tree of life?
Just the form.
The form, yeah. I think the number 7 also relates to that. Yeah, okay. Anything else? What else does it resemble?
Rainbow.
Oh, a rainbow. That one really resembles a rainbow, yeah.
A brain.
A brain? Oh, good. You guys are good, yeah. It's also a little spiral-like, right? It's not exactly a spiral, but it's certainly in that family. It's kind of, you know, you can kind of see that foundation in it. And, of course, it has a center. And sometimes the center is sort of, you know, this is the center, but there's also this, slightly off-center, but another type of center. So it's sort of circular, especially that one on your bulletin, more circular. And what do circles symbolize? Just call out a few things, one or two words.
Wholeness.
Anything else?
Unending.
Unending? Oh, yeah.
Life.
Life? The cosmos. The divine. Okay. Can you think of any other sacred spaces besides labyrinths that are circular?
Stonehenge.
Stonehenge? Mm-hmm. We've got stone circles. How about basilicas?
The earth.
Excuse me?
The earth.
Oh, the earth? Yeah, the earth is a sacred space, not a human-made one. Neo-pagan ritual circles, Buddhist stupas. Campfires, oh, that's a good one too, yeah. And the storytelling around campfires in that sacred space. And medicine wheels. Anything else? Okay, that's enough. The circle seems to be a form that people often naturally gravitate toward in creating sacred space. The Oglala Lakota shaman Black Elk said, "Everything an Indian does is in a circle. And that is because the power of the world always works in circles, and everything tries to be round." I like the poetry of that. Melissa Gale West points to one element that all circles have in common, and it's very simple. They have centers, which she describes as that, that place from which the circle itself is birthed. And she, And she writes of the significance of the center of a labyrinth. "Reaching center in the labyrinth is about reaching a focus of spiritual power and grace, the still point in the center of a chaotic world. After the twists and turns of the labyrinth's circuits, this still point mirrors the calm center of gravity deep in our own soul, unaffected by the movement of our lives. We mentioned that in addition to its generally circular shape, the labyrinthine path is kind of based on a spiral. Again, I'll quote from Melissa Gale West. She writes, "Spirals, inscribed in stone the world over since megalithic times, serve as threshold markers at holy sites in China, Egypt, Siberia, Europe, Mexico, basically everywhere. These graven spirals delineate the boundary between secular and sacred in temples and burial sites, marking a person's passage from or death to the everyday world and rebirth into the realm of the sacred by entering hallowed ground. Humankind invokes spirit by moving in spirals." According to psychoanalyst Carl Jung, the process of healing and individuation most resembles the dynamics of a spiral. We can hardly help feeling that the unconscious moves spiral-wise around a center, gradually getting closer, while the characteristics of the center grow more and more distinct. I'd like to point to one other basic but less obvious building block of the seven circuit labyrinth. And it's right here. This is the pattern known as the meander. You often see long borders of them, right? We think of the pattern as Greek, and it does indeed show up frequently in Greek designs as a border. But it's also found on figurines throughout old Europe from thousands of years before the time of classical Greece. Maria Djimboutis found it on a bird goddess figurine in Western Ukraine, dating as long ago as between 18,000 and 15,000 BC. So if you trace a finger here, you know, and it could go on and on, but it's forward and backward. If we trace that finger along the forward and backward looping path of a meander, it produces a sense of wandering without direction, the feeling we associate with the term meander. Yet the meander is a foundational building block of the seven circuit labyrinth, with its single path into the center and back out again. Here in the corner, I've got an illustration of how the meander becomes the seven circuit labyrinth. So it reads, starting from the top left to right, the way you would read. So you do have to curve the outside and the inside, but you get there as it wraps around. Moving away from the labyrinth's shape, let's turn to the pathway that emerges when the meander is stretched into these seven circuits. Sig Lonergan, in his book Labyrinths, Ancient Myths and Modern Uses, relates some anecdotes about a person he met at a gathering where a group of people were building a labyrinth. This man was a computer programmer and clearly not stupid. But as they built their labyrinth, he seemed like an absolute fool. After relating some stories of this guy's antics, Lonergan writes, "The next day I went up to the labyrinth and found yesterday's fool standing at the mouth of it in deep contemplation. As I walked up to him, he began telling me about several things he had noticed concerning the layout of the classical seven-circuit labyrinth that I had never been aware of before." And here you have to realize that Sig Lonergan probably knows as much about labyrinths as anybody alive. First, he pointed out that there were seven paths and the goal, and if you number them from the outside path in, that you walk them in the order of 3, 2, 1, 4, 7, 6, 5, 8. Notice that it is a repeating pattern, 3, 2, 1, 4, and 7, 6, 5, 8. They both offer the same kind of flow, coming down from near to the top, down to the bottom, and then springing up to the top. In case that's difficult to picture, I don't know if you can see the numbers on this. You might be too far away. They're a little bit small. But here's, you know, the way he's talking about them being numbered 1, 2, 3, from outside in to the seventh. The center is number 8. And this is the way you walk them. You start here, so the black numbers here represent the way you actually walk them. You'll go through this rung first, which is number 3 from the outside. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So this is the rhythm he's talking about. 1, 2, 3 out, and the leap to 4 in, and then 5, 6, 7 again out, and all the way into 8. And then you would come back out. My foolish computer friend, I'm still quoting from Sig Lonergan, then began talking about the cross at the heart of the basic building blocks. He showed me that the first turn you take is in the lower left-hand quadrant, A. So that's this. That's the first turn. And the final turn is in the upper right quadrant, C. So you start here and you end here. They are the alpha and the omega, and only a dot, an infinitesimally small point in the center of the cross, separates them. And yet you have to go for such a long distance to get from one to the other. So near and yet so far. The beginning of one's journey and the end are literally right next to one another. Also, the other two quadrants of the cross, the upper left, B, and the lower right, D, mark the beginning and end of path number 4, exactly in the middle of one's walk through the labyrinth. So again, you start here, you go bum, 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 bum. That's in the middle. And then dun, 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 dun. So those two are right in the middle of your walk. So the cross delineates both extremes and the means. Another noteworthy bit about the path you take to get to the labyrinth's center via these 7 circuits is that given the switchbacks along the way, the odd-numbered circuits, 1, 3, 5, and 7, are traveled clockwise, and the even-numbered circuits, 2, 4, and 6, are walked counterclockwise. Sig Lonergan points out that the classic 7-circuit labyrinth represents the path of the planet Mercury, the path the planet Mercury takes through the heavens in roughly 1 year as viewed from Earth. From our point of view here on Earth, Mercury travels retrograde or backwards 3 times a year, and forward or direct 4 times. Lonergan presents in his book a lovely diagram and detailed explanation of how this works. Too complex to go into here, but you can read the book if you want. I'll simply mention that Mercury isn't exactly the easiest light to spot in the sky, yet the ancients appear to have known a lot about the planet's movements. In mythologies and philosophies of many cultures and religions, the number 7 carries the association of a gateway to transcendence. And throughout history and across cultures, people have engaged in practices involving circling around a sacred site 7 times. Unfortunately, time won't allow me to delve into all the examples. Likewise, to dive into uses of the labyrinth, ancient or modern, or both, would require me to keep you here beyond the allotted time. I find what we know of ancient labyrinth rites fascinating, and the ways in which people use labyrinths today is a rich, varied, and highly meaningful. It is rich, varied, and highly meaningful. In lieu of embarking on another whole journey here, I will simply point out 2 elements that are fundamental to the approach of most serious labyrinth practitioners. These are focused attention and openness to receiving information. Melissa Gale West brings clarity to these issues, writing, By being fully conscious of our intentions for any particular walk, we harness the power of the labyrinth. We can frame those intentions as either a question or a statement. The power of the intention is not in how it is worded, but in that it is consciously chosen and walked into. We must also be willing to hear the truth as we walk into our intention. Sig Lonnegren calls the labyrinth a hermetic tool. He claims that Hermes, Greek messenger to the gods, is a powerful archetype for the labyrinth. And Hermes' corollary in the Roman mythology is
Mercury.
Lonnegren says, whatever your intention, when you send it out, Hermes brings back the message. It is important to remember, though, that Hermes is also the god of liars. You can ask a question and have such a powerful subconscious need for a particular response that you can't hear anything else. If that's the case, that's the response that Hermes will bring you. If you're after the truth and you want Hermes to bring you the truth, you've got to put aside that need for a specific answer. And I'll close with this. I have this beautiful book that I got from Rebecca Burney. Does that look familiar? When she and Dunbar cleared out their house to move into Vantage House. The author's name is Virginia Westbury, and this is the very end of her text, actually following the epilogue. Pilgrimage is a time-honored method for achieving spiritual and psychological renewal. In the Middle Ages, pilgrims took to the road to make the often difficult journey to a sacred shrine in order to show faith, atone for sins, or to win salvation. Along the way, they faced many challenges and dangers. Yet for some, the journey itself became as spiritually worthwhile as the eventual destination. Today, in our high-pressured world, more and more of us are seeking time out to rediscover ourselves and to find new meaning in life. Some of us are taking to the pilgrim's road once again, discovering that a journey to a sacred site can become a voyage into the truth of our own hearts. Labyrinths are now to be found around the world. As in medieval times, they constitute a pilgrim's path that can be traced from city to city, country to country. Westbury then tells us what comes next in the book. What follows is a guide to some of the world's most unusual, beautiful, and historic labyrinths. Our journey begins on the west coast of the United States and takes us through Canada, Britain, and finally Europe. And here, at the very end of this book, is all of those wonderful photos. And there are wonderful photos throughout the book. But these are a really lovely display. And I'll leave the book up here. And if you'd like to look through it after the service, you're invited to do so and see these labyrinths. And you're also invited to join in a labyrinth walk service at Bon Secours Retreat Center on July 21st.